flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back into Sports Talk here on WWL. We're at the Host Committee's Media Center, Radio Row and Memorial Convention Center, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and Soso. Happy to welcome in now to the Radio Huddle, Dan Israel, executive producer and host on the Kansas City Chiefs Radio Network. Welcome on into New Orleans. How's it going?
Thank you, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing great.
Good.
Well, Dan, it's something in the water in Kansas City, or what is it?
Maybe, Bobby, I don't know.
You know, we'd be like, well, maybe because we crawfish someone, the Saints, won a Super Bowl. But I tell you what, you got my
you
son.
You need some of that water.
My son lives in St. Louis, and then his in-laws are all the big Mizzou fans.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing now, even in St. Louis, how they now embrace the Chiefs. Because they have no NFL team. So they all ticked off because the Cardinals went to Arizona.
That's right.
And the Rams took off to Los Angeles. So now they love their St. Louis baseball Cardinals.
Yeah.
You know, that's over the Royals for sure.
They like their hockey, too.
The hockey, the Blues.
Yeah.
But, you'd be amazed. I'm like, well, y'all in St. Louis, you're not in Kansas City. But, no, that's our home team. That's our state team, now the Chiefs.
I think it's interesting. You know, the Chiefs fatigue has become a very real thing, right? I mean, people are a little, okay, we're a little through with the Chiefs.
Right.
But here's the thing. It's entertaining. It's good quality and entertaining football. I mean, these games lasting to the fourth quarter, does the league, I mean, what would the league want that would be any better than that?
Well, about 17 games in a row, and you win the last possession.
Yeah.
One score games. Look, I mean, I want to be, that's why, look, I don't have a dog in hunt. I was telling Stephen Mike this. Listen, whoever wins, wins. I don't have the Chiefs or the Eagles. I just want to be watching the game at the end, as the middle of the third quarter, And now, the NFL wants that because the more eyes, everybody's watching. Like you say, you want to be entertained.
Because they can sell commercials at a higher price.
That's right. When you look at it, the last matchup when they did play in the Super Bowl, very
really
entertaining, Chiefs-Eagles. So hopefully we have that kind of game. So.
One of the unsung kind of stories here, everybody brings up Mahomes and is how well this team has drafted. And people say, tank to get a better draft pick. Who's picked better over the last 3 years than the Chiefs? Look where they're picking.
Yeah,
they're not picking fourth or fifth or ninth. They pick in at the end. They either 29, 30, 31, or 32. That's where they're picking. I think that part with the Chiefs has really been the story behind the story here.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Mike, because this league is not designed to let you win and continue to win.
Right.
They want the parity. They want to exchange out the teams. And the Chiefs are not only are they picking the bottom of the draft of each round, but they're playing the toughest schedules because you're playing all like-positioned teams. So, I mean, it's this gauntlet of, like, playoff teams that we're playing, and still to go 15-1. I don't call that Denver game. That wasn't a
bomb. Yeah, yeah.
But to set a franchise record in a year where you've had just week after week after week after week injuries, where you've got new guys, you've got second string guys coming up and playing positions. They've done a masterful job of drafting and coaching those players to be ready to play.
Well, all I know is not, I think, just a mental thing. It's like a real thing. It's like you better be up at the end of the game by 9 points or more. It has to be two scores because, it's like you're going to bet against Pat Mahomes. It's almost like Tom Brady passed the torch. You know, it's like, I got the Tom Brady fatigue, whatever, Patriots. Now it's with the Chiefs. And I'd be like, don't bet against Tom Brady.
Yeah.
You're going to lose your money. Then now it's like, I don't know, don't bet against Pat Mahomes. You might want somebody else. We end up losing. That's why I'm saying, I was telling Steve this. And Steve grew up an Eagles fan. He's from Jersey. He's been here.
I'm originally a Jersey boy.
He needs all the prayers he can get.
And so I was telling Steve, I said, you better hope at the end that it's they're winning by 9 points or more because they were saying one score. And that's kind of look at the game last time. And even though Jalen Hurts outplayed Pat Mahomes, and what I mean by that, look, it was 38-35. Now, because I like numbers, I look at numbers. Here's Jalen Hurts, 27 of 38, 304 yards, the touchdowns. They both didn't throw an interception. And all of a sudden, Jalen Hurts has 15 rushes. I didn't realize this. 70 yards, three touchdowns rushing. He had 374 total yards. Mahomes had 226. Mahomes was 21 of 27, 182 yards. That's kind of like when I played. You know, he threw over 182, 200 yards, late 80s, early 90s. Now he had three touchdowns and zero picks, six rushes, 44 yards. But that's why I'm just looking at the thing, though, that was the difference. And y'all remember when this happened, the scoop and score.
Yeah.
You know when Jalen Hurts stumbles and he drops the ball and they pick it up?
Right.
That's why.
Game changers, right?
That's what Jalen Hurts has to avoid. Yeah. But I think if Jalen Hurts plays well, and obviously the addition of Saquon Barkley, is huge.
He was my league MVP. I really believed he.
It's normally a quarterback award, but this year he should be him.
He meant more to his team than either Lamar Jackson meant to his, or even Josh Allen meant to the Bills, in my opinion.
But. Yeah, and then you look at the addition. I think they both played better. You look at Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
What he meant with the Ravens to Lamar Jackson. Yeah. And then you look, Saquon Barkley with Jalen Hurts. Well, if you're a quarterback and you get that kind of production running, you better play good. That supporting cast.
I think somebody told me he has seven. Saquon Barkley has seven carries for 60 plus yards.
Seven carries over 60 yards.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, not one or two.
That is ridiculous.
That's
an unbelievable number.
And here's a stat that goes along with that, because these explosive plays that they're living off of, Hurts was sacked like 45 times. When does a rushing team get its quarterback sacked 45 times like that?
Yeah, and I got it right here. This is like an NFL record, seven touchdown runs of at least 60 yards in a regular season in the playoffs. And he needs, I think he's going to get this, even though, you probably want the Chiefs to stop him, obviously. But he only needs 30 yards rushing to break Terrell Davis's record for 2,476 yards set in 1998 season. I was doing the Falcons radio then. I just finished playing, and I'm doing the pre- and post-game. That's when Atlanta went to Denver and played Miami in the Super Bowl. And Terrell Davis, we all know what he meant to John Elway. And so all of a sudden, here's Barkley. Saquon just needs 30 more rushing yards to break Terrell Davis's record in 1998 season for the most ever in a season and playoff combined included.
That's incredible.
So, I mean, that's why Saquon, who can not be a Saquon Barkley fan?
No, and he again, good running back, entertaining football. Man, he's a blast to watch.
Yes.
I just don't want it to be against us.
Yeah. Do you think this is the last game for Travis Kelce?
If you listen to what he said last night, no. And everyone's been saying, yeah, but if he's on the podium and he's hoisting a third Lombardi, is that really what he's going to say? I said, he's going to say four-peat. Tell you.
They're going to have to put, just like Pat Riley, somebody going to have to put their hand over his mouth.
Well, why not? I played to 1997, and now in hindsight, my elbow was all messed up. And I tell Mike this all the time.
Yeah.
And George Seifert from the old 49ers wanted me to go play with the Carolina Panthers. But I felt like I was cheating. Man, I knew mentally where to go, but, the last year I played, I threw 24 touchdown passes. I couldn't even throw it past 52 yards. Mm. But I would throw it deep at the beginning just to get the cornerbacks to soften up. Then I would just throw curl routes and slants and all that and running the run and shoot. So I feel like I was stealing money. But now in hindsight, I should have stole the money. They were going to give me $1 million to go play. And I said, I want to quit on my own terms. Now I would take the approach, I'm going to quit when they kick me out.
Yeah.
And keep playing until they kick out. Because then you're in the real world.
And I don't think, Bobby, most fans don't have a clue what you guys go through, how fatiguing it is, how hurt you are at the end of a season. I mean, the optimal or the appropriate answer Kelce should give if he's asked that is, I don't know, let me get away from this game. Let me relax and
let me go take a vacation with Taylor, then we'll talk over maybe or something.
That's right. My favorite.
He didn't talk about it as much as his brother.
Jason talked about retiring, and I think I told this to Steve. When you start talking about retirement, you more than halfway there.
You know, it's funny, Mike. I do a broadcast boot camp for the NFL where we teach retired players how to broadcast. Well, he wasn't retired yet, but he was talking about retiring.
Yep.
And I was really shocked because he was very good, so much so that he already had the jobs lined up. And he went back for another year.
Well, it's almost like like the brother combination. Who doesn't love this? Look at the Mannings.
Yeah.
Look at Peyton and Eli. Well, if you have Jason and Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
That's like a no-brainer. I mean, you have a lot of competition network trying to get those guys on.
I'll tell you, that Eagles loss, Kelce and Jason and Travis met right in front of me outside the locker room after the game. It was tough to watch.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
That's tough to watch. You love what your brother's been able to accomplish. Sure,
but you want to beat your brother.
That's right. That's right. So much personal hurt.
Yeah.
Steve Spagnuolo, because, you know, we were here when Steve came in. It was the Bounty Gate year. Nothing was right. It was a lot of chaotic stuff behind the scenes. And Sean
got suspended, him and Mickey Loomis.
Spags tells the story that I was good friends with Sean. He hires me. Okay? That was the last time I saw him. And then when I saw him again at the end of the year, he fired me. No, I didn't see him in between. But look what he has done with his career. And now the first defensive coordinator to ever win a Super Bowl with two different teams. Yeah. That's remarkable.
Now think about this. He, you know, you put up on a pedestal. I don't know if I've ever witnessed this. He coached the worst defense in NFL history in 2012. Look at the numbers.
Yeah.
To me, that's to say he didn't forget how to coach. Yeah. I mean, the Saints' talent was that bad defensively?
Like, yeah, but we do a cover zero. Also some other things.
Yeah, we had cover zero, the blitz.
There's a lot going on.
And then all of a sudden, I look at now what he's accomplished with the Chiefs. He's a Pro Football Hall of Famer defensive coordinator.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's one of the most decorated coordinators ever now. And I watch him and he is just such a personable coach. He really does relate to these younger players. That's tough, guys. You know, I mean, all of us that are in regular work here, this millennial thing is a complete shift in workforce. Well, the NFL didn't escape that either. These guys want time off. They want work-life balance, which is, as an ex-player, you must just go, what?
Yeah, no two-a-days anymore?
Yeah.
Well, we go now, the collective bargaining agreement, they can't go more than 3 days. Then they have to have a day off and practice once a day. We went 10 straight days of two-a-days.
Yes, right.
It was like, what? And then I can remember, you know, you playing, I get a concussion, I get my front teeth knocked out. And I said, no, I don't like football right now. It is truly like a job. I'm trying to survive the best way I can support my family. I never forget, I had a headache so bad. I'm throwing up on the way coming back from Tampa on the plane. And here I am. I'm just like, you know, I look pitiful. I look like a Cajun hillbilly, no teeth. I'm like, you know, coming out like I played hockey or something. And so here I am. And so I go to practice on Friday. And Coach Morris said, Bobby, you know, how you doing? Jim Mora. And then, and I go, well, my headaches went away. I'm feeling pretty good. He go, good. You're playing Sunday.
Yeah.
And I played against Washington. And I was lucky. I had 11 concussions in 15 years.
Wow.
But never more than one in a year. So, you know, like Troy Aikman and like Steve Young, when they got a concussion, they got another one 2 or 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
And so I was always fortunate. I'll tell you, if I'd have got hit maybe in that Washington game, I might have been in a coma. I mean, it was like, but I avoided the hit, and it didn't happen. And I played well. It's just lucky, you know, rolling the dice. Well, now, how they take care of the players and all.
Yeah.
And you go into the 10, and you look like with Tua and all that. So
You're shipped off to the locker room, never to be seen from until your concussion clears.
Yeah, the other guy, a month and a half.
The other guy, too, is your linebackers coach, Brandon Daly.
Yeah.
Brandon comes to our Louisiana line camp. It's 18 years he has shown up, works with Pete Jenkins, and go through the whole deal. This is going to be his 9th Super Bowl.
Wow.
9 Super Bowls.
I didn't realize that.
He's got 6 winning rings.
Wow. I did not realize that.
Because he was with Belichick and Brady, and now he's with Kansas City.
That makes sense.
With Mahomes and Reed. So Pete Jenkins always tells him, I don't know how good of a coach he is, but he knows how to pick quarterbacks.
I'll tell you, he's got his work cut out for him.
And I could say the Chiefs are a little bit closer to my heart than I would say the Eagles. Because I think the Chiefs fans are nice. The Eagles fans are terrible.
You know, he baited them.
Well, the thing is, if you a Saints fan and you go to a Philly game, I want to take a road trip. You go there, and I said, no, I wouldn't wear my Saints jersey and all that. And they're going to torment
rough,
you,
right.
and you might get hit in back the head. Or if you go in the restroom, I'm just going to use the bathroom. Then they'll punch you in back the head. No, you can get jumped. No, that didn't happen in Arrowhead. But I can tell you this, the loudest stadium I ever played in, and I'm going from the pregame, a good thing we jumped on the Chiefs quick, and we won at Arrowhead with the Saints. Steve DeBerg was the quarterback then. I was going way back. And just in the warm-ups, go, whoa, it's going to be loud in there. We better jump on them quick. And we end up beating the Chiefs. So to me, the best, loudest atmosphere, because we, the noise in the Superdome, look at the King Dome back in Seattle.
Yeah.
The Arrowhead Stadium, it's just unbelievable, the atmosphere and the noise. And so, these are real football fans.
Yeah.
When I look at Kansas City. So, and then my connection, too, was with Hank Stram. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hank Stram came to the Saints after he won the Super Bowl with the Chiefs.
I forgot about
He's living on the North Shore, but I lived in Mandeville. So, and when he was later on in his life, he was doing the radio, doing like Monday Night Football, Westwood One, and all that. So, I'd go to his house. I never forget this. I would go to his house and have. He goes, Bobby, come have coffee with me. So I'd go sit with him in his living room, and his wife would walk out with a tray and give us coffee and all that. And he'd say, and his wife would say, no, Bobby, wait, don't come to the house now. Give him like half an hour on it, because he wanted to look his best. You know, he'd be, he's putting makeup and all. They're like, so I'd be like, he looked like looking no matter what. He went to, one-on-one, just telling old war stories. Yeah. And
Hank worked for us here at WWL for 3 years. He took Mike Ditka's place. They were doing a casino show, and then Mike gets the head coaching job with the Saints. So they were looking for somebody to fill Mike's shoes, and Hank comes in. All those years, he never called me Mike. It was always Bayou. He had a nickname
for everybody.
For everybody. Yeah. It was always Bayou.
Yeah, I think the only person he called by name was Lenny Dawson. everybody else had a nickname.
So it seems like, didn't he just acknowledge Lenny Dawson something with Kansas City? I was just thinking, like, they named some in the press box maybe with him?
The video half for the television side of it is now the Lynn Dawson press box.
Well, right, because I remember a long time ago, maybe the Chiefs went very good then. It was probably a dozen years ago when they hadn't won a game, but they beat the Saints in the Dome. And I remember seeing him up in the press box in the Superdome. I think it was about 12 years ago, and it was like, Lynn. And I'm like, whoa. You know, I'm seeing, like, Lynn Dawson. I'm like saying, that's a living, that's like seeing Joe Namath or whatever. You know, Johnny Unitas or whatever it might be. You know, like, when you finally see, I remember the first time I got to do a couple of fishing shows with Burt Jones. You know, I mean, I'm in seventh grade. I got a Burt Jones jersey. I'm going to be like Burt Jones. You know, LSU, he goes with the Colts. And then I'm doing Suzuki Great Outdoors with Burt Jones. Remember Larry Zonka and the Burt Jones, Suzuki Great Outdoors. So we're out fishing down the bayou, and with Burt Jones. You get to do that with your idols. And I go, man, I hit the lottery.
Tell him how y'all were fishing. Fly fishing?
Oh, no, listen, we were fishing for a redfish in the marsh, and here, Burt Jones, so coming at redfish, he goes, I'm not going to use a rod and reel, I'm using fly fishing. Fly fishing.
What? So all brackish water, you can't see.
All of a sudden, he's introducing fly fishing in the saltwater marsh.
I don't know much about fishing. This doesn't sound right.
So get to have those moments, boy, you can't
Spent 35 years by Lenny, and best times of my life.
Dan, definitely appreciate you stopping by and giving us some time. I hope you enjoy the rest of the time in New Orleans.
Hey, you know what I like about the Chiefs? I think Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes said this, and I think Scott Rappelli messed this up in the paper. He called it the Chiefs Nation. It is not the Chiefs Nation. It's the Chiefs Kingdom.
It is.
I like that. It's the Who That Nation, but
that's
the Chiefs Kingdom. Kingdom.
Don't confuse those two.
Yeah. Who That Nation and the Chiefs Kingdom. I like that.
I'd leave you with a go Chiefs, but out of respect.
Oh, that's no problem at all.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate it.
Good to be with you guys.
Executive producer and host on the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel, joining us. We're taking a break here on Sports Talk. Be back with more right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk here at the Memorial Convention Center. Host Committee's Media Center on Radio Row, powered by Lambert, Saney, Smith, and Soso. Talking about Super Bowl 59, getting ready to kick off on Sunday. Kansas City Chiefs and the Philadelphia Eagles squaring off, and the second time in 2 years. It's, you know, basically, you know, part due between these two teams in the title game.
And they're two totally different teams today.
Yeah.
Okay, they got some of the same players, but, you know, you think about the Eagles and the transformation, even in the coaching staffs of both, have been kind of reworked. Because those two coaches that were with the Eagles, now I'm not sure what Sirianni coaches, to
What's
be honest.
What's funny is one stayed in Arizona last time.
Yeah, and, you know, figure this time, it looks like one of them might stay here with Kellen Moore. But you think about Sirianni, you know, and then Gannon, and then, you know, everything sort of works out.
Right.
New offensive, defensive coordinators. And, you know, we wondered a little bit, could Nick survive?
Wait, that was talk about this season, like Nick Sirianni on the hot seat.
Could he survive? Because he's unconventional.
Right.
Any guy that's going to go on the sidelines and try to pick a fight with Jalen Carter, no. You need to get some examination there. No, you better not pick a fight with Jalen. And on any stretches, and me went on the sidelines, and Big Dom had to separate them
right.
Between the two of them. But, you know, look, you know, Nick does it his own way. And it's unconventional how he coaches. He does have a talented team, but that ain't by luck. You're not winning by luck.
Right. That what people think about his attitude or how he cowers himself, that don't matter when it comes to playing football.
And the players don't care.
No, okay,
that deal is, you treat us right, you treat us like men, and we good. And in the heat of the battle, you know, I think people make so much of a big deal about, you know, sometimes coaches and players kind of square
it, right?
off and talking to one another. Now, again, I'd be a little bit careful around Jalen, but it does happen a lot,
yeah.
A lot more than you think.
Like you mentioned, heat of the battle, things are said.
You know, and even we saw a couple years back with Travis Kelce and Andy running into him. You know, and almost knocked the pops down. Come on. And Andy, the way he's built today, you know, he falls. One of the things, now I'll tell part of the story. I'll let Pete Jenkins tell it next time he's on. But Pete tells a story about when they played the Saints and he was on the staff with Andy.
Okay.
And Mike Cirio, you know, Mike's got his place here downtown. Mike's a big LSU guy. So he was tight with Pete, and he was like, what do you think Andy wants to eat? And he was like, I'm not real sure. He said, well, I'm going to send him a big muffalata. Okay. He sent him fried shrimp, fried catfish, and like what would be equivalent to like two bowls of seafood gumbo. Now, Andy thought he was going to be able to eat that all in one shot, which he did.
Whoa.
But he called that gumbo, he called it soup. So the next day he tells Pete, man, Pete, that soup was really good. Pete said, we're talking about soup. He said, man, you know that stuff with that seafood in it? He said, no. He said, that's gumbo. He said, okay, it was really good. He said, man, cereal, man, you got to thank him for me. Man, he said, that big sandwich, that went down pretty good. He said, you ate everything? He said, yeah, I ate the whole deal. So he ate a muffalata. And that deal, that he said, I think he had a few fried shrimp and a piece or two of fried fish left. But he said Andy cleaned out,
man,
basically what they brought him over there. But, you know, that's, I think, what makes him sort of a lovable guy, you know, because he's a regular cat. You know, he's not this GQ-looking guy. He does the commercials now. They got a guy that kind of plays Andy. It's not all Andy in the commercial. But the fact that, man, he's become one of the greatest play designers ever in this game. You can call any play you want. The ability to design a play. I don't think there's anybody better than Andy Reid.
And I think a lot of folks always, they're looking for this big personality in coach.
He's not that guy. And I know Pete said, Mike, this is no offense to anybody I've ever worked with. And, you know, Pete's coach 54 years.
Right.
He said, but he is the nicest and the fairest guy I've ever coached with or for. And he's coached with a lot of big-time guys throughout that career. And he said, it's just the way he treats everybody. But he says, you know, it's funny, when Andy walks in that room with the Chiefs, everybody kind of stands up in that, sits up in that chair.
Respect.
It's not slouch. It's respect for him as a coach, because he's going to treat you like a man. Now, what he wants from you, you give me effort. I want you giving me effort.
and mental mistakes, that's on you, not on us. Okay?
Right.
We're going to teach you, but that mental mistake is on you. And he'll accept the physical mistake because it happens. Okay? You make a physical mistake. He's not too keen on the mental ones. That's the ones that get under his skin. It's funny in talking to people that have worked for Bill Belichick or Parcells.
Even Peyton, I think, too.
Exactly. They'll accept the physical mistake or making a mistake on the field is the mental mistake.
Right,
that
we've gone over and over and over in this, and you still can't get it right.
Exactly. And so it's funny how the loyalty on that staff has stayed, too.
Yeah.
You think about Spag all those years, Brandon all those years, because Brandon came a few years back. He could have stayed with Belichick.
Yeah.
He goes there.
Do you think it's a little odd that no team has, you know, looking for a head coach has come calling for Spags even?
You know, and he's a defensive-minded guy.
Right.
And I don't know, Steve. Some of that stigma of what happened in
sure.
with the Rams, I think, is still on him with that. But, man, he was a great coordinator with the Giants. It didn't work out with the Rams. Didn't work out with the Saints. But look what's happened in Kansas City.
For sure.
And I'm surprised he has not gotten more phone calls.
Yeah, there's
about
not even
job.
Like the whisper of it happening.
No, and so he might be one of those guys. I know Bob talks about it. You know, lifelong, really great assistant coach.
I like, know my place.
Like Vic,
right?
Vic Fangio, Wade Phillips, exactly
yeah.
that sort of guy for all those years. Dick LeBron, you know, Dick LeBeau, excuse
right,
me,
yeah.
For all those years as a coordinator. And some guys are built for the big room, and some guys aren't. And maybe at this stage of his life with Steve, maybe he feels, hey, I'm comfortable here, and I'm comfortable working for Andy, and Andy's already made the comment, I'm not retiring.
Yeah, I'm interested to see, like, a guy that was here, we know as head coach, now in Chicago with the defensive coordinator, Dennis Allen, I think he's going to have great success in Chicago.
I think he's one of those guys that, the coordinator spot is built for him.
Yeah.
The big question mark, after you watch what happened when he was with the Raiders, and not all of it was his fault, to get a second shot
not
with
that,
with that
shot,
type
right.
record, man, that's rare in this league. Really rare.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We are hanging out at the Host Committee's Media Center on Radio Row in the Memorial Center, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and Soso, celebrating the big game coming Sunday in New Orleans. And, of course, we'll have it here on WWL. We'll be right back with more after this, so stay tuned. Back in our coverage of the big game coming up in New Orleans, we're here at the Host Committee Media Center on Radio Row and Memorial Convention Center, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and Soso. Going to head back to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Got Sam and Gretna hanging on. Appreciate it, man. What you got for us today, Sam?
Hey, Steve. Hey, Mike. Bobby still there?
Yeah. We all here. You all here.
You got Sam?
Yeah. Look, Bobby, did you go to that open house last night?
No, we open house.
He went to the dome.
I went to the where was that last night?
I was at the Superdome. Sometimes it's a little shaky.
Yeah, I was in the dome. Carvin, talking to Vic Fangio and you know, talking to the Eagles and Chiefs players. Yeah, I was in that.
Yeah.
No, that's grown unbelievable. Good. You know, compared to the Ravens and 49ers here. You know how they make everything. Then it was in the afternoon. Now it's prime time.
Right.
It's a fan event.
Yeah.
They must have had, I don't know, the lower bowl. I don't know, was that 15, 20,000? There was a lot of people. I said, oh, this is.
Jim Derry, I did the interview with him earlier today. Jim writes for the Times-Picayune. And he had a picture of 2002, you know, when the Patriots played up against the Rams. And into that moment, Bob, I don't think they had more than 200 people.
Oh yeah, no, Mike.
Look at it today.
Well, Mike, that what was that? Is that 10, 11, 12 years? What was 2014?
14.
The Ravens, 49ers. No,
right.
Just in, let's say a decade plus. No, it's like it was almost too big. I mean, I don't know, nothing's too big for the NFL, but it was almost. I don't know. I felt like people on top of me. I mean, it was, but anyway, what you got, Sam? Sorry about that.
Well, the point I was making is that I don't care about either team. I'm kind of pulling for the Eagles, I guess, because of Coach Moore and Garner Johnson and Zach Bond. So I guess I'm pulling for Philly, but I don't really care. The Saints aren't in it. And I went because I haven't been in the Dome since Katrina. And before I did the transportation, I sold programs at Tulane Stadium and the Dome.
Oh,
and
whoa.
I mean, this coverage is fantastic. I'm bummed because of medical situation. This is the first year I'm not driving for Super Bowl.
Oh,
so
wow.
I only went because I wanted to see inside the Dome. What I'm bringing up, though, is that Jennifer Hale and DeMario Davis, I mean, amazing. When I was standing there, I was like so proud of how they did, and then our music and everything. And the cutest thing, while I was walking, I wasn't about to get one of LaToya's tickets, so I took the bus over there, right? While I was walking to the bus, walking down LaSalle behind City Hall. The lady and her little boy, like three, four, probably 4 years old or something, and he's marching. And with his hands, he's doing the cymbal thing, right? And I walked past him. I said, St. Aug, and he starts jumping up and down. You know, but that dome is so beautiful. The field's beautiful. I didn't even stay because I'm not into all that interviews and everything. I mean, unless it's you guys and all that. Bobby, real quick, Mike and Steve, and I guess we'll follow up on this next week. When you have a coach in the running like Coach Moore or Coach Kafka, ahead of time, do they kind of get together a list of possible assistant coaches, which I'm sure they do?
Not only get a list, I think they got them set.
Yeah, yeah.
You can bank it. If it's Kellen Moore, he has already got things set.
Yeah, he got his ducks in a row. He got his ducks in a row.
Because, okay, I don't have to do that if I'm Kellen Moore. You know what I got? I got an agent. He can get on that phone, and he can call somebody else.
This is my list.
Because a lot of people think, oh, they talking to the coach. No, they talking to his agent and his lawyer.
Yeah.
Bob can talk about the fact that you had Hugh Campbell. Hugh did everything for you, right?
No, we talk Hugh Campbell.
No, your agent.
Oh, Greg Campbell.
Greg Campbell. Greg,
Hugh Campbell's old coach.
The old coach from Edmonton.
Edmonton Eskimos. I was like, Hugh Campbell. Greg Campbell. Yeah, your agent.
Bob didn't do that.
Yeah, no. Greg Campbell, my agent, always would joke, if Barry Manilow and Gene Wilder made a baby, that's what you look like.
So and that's baby, true.
And that's how they look. But, yeah, your agent does everything. The same thing with Kellen Moore. This is what the NFL does not want to happen. And this is true. That if you look at it, when you're trying to put a coaching staff together, the NFL, hell no, Kellen Moore, no. Somebody got to do that for you. You know why? Because he's handling this duty as the Eagles play caller. He's setting up a damn game plan. Now, you can do it right quick with a list, and then, okay, go do this for me. Like his agent. Yeah, that's why when you say, like, oh, in between the practices and before I go to bed at night, I'm going to call so-and-so on the phone. No.
Yeah, right.
No, he's totally focused because that's better in his resume. For him to be the winning offensive coordinator for the Eagles and stop the Chiefs from three-peating.
In essence, what they do is they'll tell their agent, hey, get in touch with this guy, that guy, this guy.
Right.
This is what we're looking at.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's not Kellen or Mike Kafka or anybody else. It's their agent. Now, a lot of people think it's them, but it's not. Sometimes I see these write-ups. Oh, they distracted because they're looking for a job. They ain't distracted by that. They got beat.
Yeah.
It wasn't the distraction.
So if the Eagles offense doesn't do anything or...
Oh, you know that's going to be the story.
It's not like, Kellen Moore had one foot out the door already going to the Saints, and the Eagles fans will be all ticked off at him. Think about it. And that has nothing, I'll tell you, if they
nothing
play bad,
to do with
that has nothing to do with him and... hiring a staff.
In your year holdout, how many times did Jim Mora or Tom Benson call you?
Zero. Well, I tried to call Mr. Benson one time, and he finally got back to me. He goes, well, you know, Mr. Bobby. He goes, Bobby, you know when I hired Jim Finks, I told him that he can be in control of everything. And then Mora was like chain of command. Finks is his boss, and then it's Moore, and then the players.
Right.
So the only thing, the year after I held out in 1991, I told you, 4K and Walsh would have worked out. They never would have brought me back. But since they didn't work out, Coach Moore said, I'm not signing my extension in 1991 unless you bring Hebert back. So they brought me back in 91. The general manager, Finks, didn't even come to my press conference.
So in a one-year time frame, one owner call.
Yeah, one. Now, you talk to the players and all, and the players would be like, Dome Patrol and Finks hated this. Don't worry, Bear, we got your back.
We're wrapping up day two of our Super Bowl coverage. Going to take a break. Be back with more right here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk as we close things out on our day two coverage from the Convention Center, the powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. Bobby, you were mentioning how you're just hoping for an entertaining game, whatever the outcome may be. Well, the last time the Chiefs and Eagles played in the Super Bowl, all time is the only time the team scored, each team scored 35 plus points in a Super Bowl.
Well, if people like points. I just want a close game. I don't care if it's 13-12, but the 30-30 sounds better.
Right.
There's more points. I want it to be close.
My thing is the over and under started at 45.5.
It's 48.5, huh?
No, it's 49.5 or 48.5, depending on where you bet.
Yeah.
That thing has went up dramatically. And I wouldn't be surprised it closes a little higher than that, because I think they believe it's going to be a high-scoring game.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. For Mike D'Attilia, I'm Steve Geller, Cajun Cannon. Tell everyone good night.
All right. Bon nuit, les gens. Good night, people. Who dat? Go, Saints.